first poem I ever heard from that I wrote on Palestine, it was published in the Faith, I think it was August last year. It's for Hula Galea from the poem is called Letter to Happy Youth. I am Hula, and I scream to you in the skies above me. Please do not leave me alone to mourn, for I have dipped my tiny limbs beneath the hem of death's door, and crawled for those same arms that hugged me, for those sets of lips that were mine to kiss, for that parental safety net woven by my future, and my arms are empty. I am the only day of our week that lives on this beach of trading, on the edge of another bloody empire. I betrayed all spices here today, a world of olive alum and ostrich feathers. I would add my name to the menu of slaves. I would tame a thousand burrocks and trek to our future, but I cannot. For their summer rain has lashed it to my childish frame, a burn your great-grandson will unleash, a memory I will unrest each day. But my Boswellian roots I will anchor to this blood-stained land, that Alexander failed to arid fern. My tears I will trade for peace. Thank you. The second poem here is, was published in the first issue of Under the Radar last month. And I suppose it's a poem that I wrote about a woman who's at war with herself, really. It's called A Feminine Shank Mare. I witnessed her again this evening, trod her secular path, simony in tow, embracing her future, clearly decorated with himself, desideratus, and he caught flicking history CD and sniggering at the audience. Incisors and canines, euphoria and perspiration, torment fighting for its say, witnessed a diurnal rush to her finishing line. One day she will be dead right. Thank you. I'm going to read my five-word poem from earlier. Anyway, this is a five-word poem. Beneath the eyes of David's star, within the safety net woven by their guns of hunger, that daily pledge to feed the crops of hatred, dishonestly strokes the Palestinian canvas, airbrushing the concrete stone that actively strangles the nation, reversing rivers, pulling flowers and fruits, an unsigned painting with a stench that does not speak the truth. I ask you, Hirst, to make an unarmed cage to encase the earless treasures and to take it to the city halls that have lost their conscience. Bang your tambourine, I say, up and down their steps and bring them to their senses. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dean. Next up we have Mr. Joe Sweeney.
Good evening, everyone. I'm on a much light-hearted, much more light-hearted note. This is continuing the story of Maisie Golan. She's a teacher in a very rough and ready school, you know, and there's no proper heating, and she keeps writing these letters to the principal trying to get some help with this thing, but it doesn't work out. Anyway, dear principal, good news, happy tidings. The second socket works, and I am unharmed. The window next to the heater is already beginning to de-ice, in parts anyway. The heater, however, has only one thin bar, and is therefore not likely to warm the whole room. As soon as it began to work, it sparked off serious migratory trends in the class. I had quite a job getting the pupils back to their seats. As soon as they saw the red glow of the heater, they all shuffled up like grateful Arctic explorers who have unexpectedly found a tent in a blizzard. 12:03. All is well, though there is a strange something or other. 1204, it's a smell of some kind, I think. 1205. It's definitely a smell, all right. Must break off here. 1208. When I got that smell, I knew immediately that something was wrong. I found Dennis Egan's shoelace smouldering on the electric bar, where he had placed it in an effort to make more heat. There was a thin curling column of acrid smoke, and then a flame suddenly burst out on the still frosty air. 1210. I was just in time to prevent Derek Owen from stuffing a rolled up plastic bag through the grating of the heater. He was anxious to keep the flames going. I have explained to him that we are not at a Halloween bonfire. I have now removed the bag. The lace is only black powder now. The window has iced over again. Apart from the freezing conditions, all is well. 1212. I have had to insist that they all sit down. I'm only going to allow those pupils who have done their homework to sit anywhere near the heater. 1220. There are now a few pupils with their faces glowing around the heater. The rest have trudged reluctantly back to Siberia, from where they are staring in stony silence, blowing on their cupped hands to offset frostbite. 1223. James the Delicate is still blue, and no move from Paul either yet. I did think earlier that I detected movement from him, but it was only water dripping from his nose. I presume it was thawed by the heat, however meaningful, which some of us are now enjoying thanks to the caretaker's intervention. 1227. There are no cases of frostbite yet, though I am worried about the outer fringes. Several pupils are stamping their feet on the floor in an effort, I think, to restore circulation. In fairness, I have to say that it is the only time I have seen them look genuinely sorry that they did not do their homework. If only they had realized that the pen is mightier than the icicle. I can only now hope that the heater will at least postpone the onset of rigor mortis, yours, etc. May. P.S. Urgent, urgent. I have just spotted movement on a window ledge across the schoolyard. It looks like John Evans from 382 on another maneuver, another daring escape mission. I can't be sure as my vision is greatly restricted by the ice on the windows. It appears to be getting thicker by the minute, not unlike some of my pupils. I'm trying to rub it clear, but the ice is very stubborn, also like my pupils. Perhaps you might investigate? It must be very cold out there. My goodness. Just look at Evans on that freezing window ledge. How did that boy stick?
Thank you, Joe. Next up we have Mr. Joe Hardy.
My mother was a great one for, she was a great one for herbal remedies, as the same East London herbal remedies. And she died at a great age from, I reckon, 1,500,000 cigarettes. When we were young, she called us, myself and my brother, to go down to the hard road to pick elderberries from a tree. This is called Elders on Ski Hard. On the Ski Hard, where the road bends upwards, west, like monkeys, we were on the elder tree. Cutting the place of dark purple berries, when Mrs. Buxty rounded into view, pushing a pram, and weary, she shouted,
"Get down out of that.
They're poisonous. What would your mother think?" But we ignored her, and cutting more, filled our bags, smirked and remained silent. Eventually, we deposited the fruit in our mother's scullery. Later, in the frosted winter, that blood wine brought her father through the only real sickness of his life. This is the dedicatory poem at the beginning of On Erebus the Dog by Donner Irlon. The way you go poems through the land, we're not that satisfied with you. But you'd be even less satisfied with us if you knew how miserable you are. You were composed of canon verses, and we are bereft of grammar, with no institute and lacking wisdom. For all we've got in this timorous council of our hearts, at the mid-hour of our mystic night, if you should meet a man of learning on your way, don't let him know your secret or hear your song. You are not made for the likes of him. You are one with a beating heart, like blessed little bird. And this is called Wait by Sean Rurdon on page 84 of Erebus the Dog. I am not the me I see here. There's a small mirror on the wall. I saw there today and yesterday the image I didn't like. Me within and without, and no real me, not there at all. There are thoughts asleep in my head tonight I don't wish to awake, and put them in the shape of words to picture me at stake. I fear they would not be the issue wanted by my race, so I'd wait until a more pleasant shape satisfies my face.
While you righted our little boat, we took down the sailors. Marvel at the power I have over you. It was an act not yet routine. You were shy with me for the first time. Body language flowed where once was the calm. A boat was bobbing home now, slowly, over mirrored sky. We sang body songs of the sea. Friendship. This is about a woman who taught me something about friendship. Sometimes you grasp me like a barnacle grips a rock on a beach, unapologetically. You show me how to become friendly when you are not there. Draw strength from inside myself. To use you as a good example, I am sincerely seeking love. You are honestly, truly offering friendship. This one is about living at home, kind of the intimate friendships at home or relationships at home. Out of my depth in this homestead, he is finishing his breakfast. Ask me, do I want some toast? I have brought my own food. A little while later, he said he has gone into Wartburg, our local city, on his motorbike. Do I want to lift? I sense his expectation of me. Very soon afterwards, when I'm ready, according to the timetable, I get my stuff together and walk down a mile to catch a bus. He said he didn't want me to be a pack horse with a worn-out Tesco bag, backpack, and handbag, walking down backwards. I cannot always do what he wants me to.
Thank you, Anita. Next up to the mic, we have Miriam Cagey.
Thank you.
stone. It was raining and the darkness of the morning was unsettling over the town of Killowy. The girl was crying as she stumbled over the thistles and brambles that ate at her skin. The water streamed down her face as she looked up from time to time, crying for Cara no Ash, and with each cry the darkness of the morning seemed more chilly. And she heard the cry, deep and loud, within, Mari Morinda, more pressing than the natural rhythm of her racing heart. In the distance, she could hear the cry and the noise of sticks being hit against the ground, and she knew that they were drawing nearer. She felt a hollowness within her, and pain struck her like pinpricks in the soles of her feet. She remembered the song that they sang in the village. Sprang so old, my dear, not where you ought to be, and the flood of water's edge, my dear, you do not want to see. And she felt herself slipping in the mud that was getting softer by the minute, as the heavy rainfall fell on her shoulders to fall onto the wet and sharp rocks. As a child, she had had the strangest coloured hair in the village. Girls of her own age had often played with it, tying love knots in it, and fondling her face in a sleepy way, saying, "You'll find the knot, Miss Sarah," which she hadn't understood much at all. The wind shrieked as she felt herself being drawn, her cario on, and she heard the river in the distance, as if answering her, and she screamed, wondering, what was her fate? Fate, what was fate? Was it the time for first blood, when she had felt so strange that she could rag between her legs to stem the flow, and the uneasy waves that seemed to be in the air, women in corners watching her, and the men staring oddly at the ground? Seeing the threat that seemed to invade her, she had run to the river and put her hair into it. She had crouched by the side and allowed the river to gently hold it in its grasp. It had helped her deal with the fear rising within her. She then stepped into it, removed the rags to allow the river to take the blood, and the wind had begun to blow as if there was no one but her, the river, and the wind. The river, from then on, she had often felt the desire rise in her to spend time there and listen to the music, for it had been waiting. The music of it begetting far away from her, and the music that the river taught her rang in her ear, making her aware of things that lay in the wind, that whispered in the grasses, that laboured on the stone, seemed silent and bare, and she would sit by the bank and wonder. And on the east room in the village, she knew that she was being watched, men looking in their pockets for something, women dressing their hair, and she felt the fear within her, rising each passing day until she could bear it no longer. She decided to run. She ran to the next village where a girl who had been kind to her was married. She might help her. She had spent the night in terror, hoping that no one would see her escape the next morning. At dawn, she crept out and began her planned route, but she had not reckoned that it was rain or that they had been waiting for this moment. She had only reached the border of one field when a shout had rose up into the air and the noise of sticks against the ground had begun. She knew how a deer felt when a bugle was raised to begin a hunt. Her heart felt that it was going to come out through her and ride in front of her. They would capture her on the path. In desperation, she looked to the river, and at that moment she heard a wail like a lament, "Mari Morinda," and her heart jumped for joy. It cut across the rain, holding her in its grip. She felt naked and she wanted to cry a thought, but it would not leave her. It pressed her to run, and run she did, crying, "Akari Oa." In the distance, she saw a tall standing stone, and instantly she knew what she must do. As she wrapped her arms around the stone pillar, she held on as the river flooded and bore away the cries of the drowned.
Thank you, Miriam. Kelly, why is Lizzie? They dropped her out at the bar. Next up we have Jessica Burr.
I didn't actually know there was a Palestinian theme tonight. The closest I had in a poem is that in an Irish boarding school. I actually was in Israel once, so about 10 years ago. I was actually studying a course in wizardry in Israel, and we were doing things like how to put a taste of whiskey into a glass of water, and how to break the smell of fresh mountain air in the room, and also how to disempower black magicians. But I always wonder why none of us could ever put an end to George Bush.
And it was kind of handy that time being half Indian and half Irish, because the Arabic people thought I was Arab and the Jewish people thought I was Jewish. But this is called Rashmi Revisited. Trees of words, man's inhumanity to man, a younger self revisited, forms of shaping, empty dormitories, folded as counterpane, walls are in bedstead, embryos of frozen emotion, distilled in sunlight, infirmary, chapel, refectory, filing past prefects in silence, disciplined deportment, double disobedience, echoes of laughter drowned out, clinging flooring melancholy of loss, expelling demons, Ouija board entities, ghosts looking for retribution, displaced people shaping the woman, authority, I broke all the rules, rabbit species, young dreams of hope, the growing up away from home, separation and bonding, our peers dragged us up without definition, the nuns were in a world we could not enter, so we lived like them. The overworked fathers toiling for our education, the mothers who went against their nature, dispossessed. We could ignite a fire for our prison days. Teachers who inspired, the cruel ones whose twisted webs were spun. The damage of those public shamings, black marks, cleanse, purify, emancipate, punctuality, courtesy, tenth week and then a star. We were all bright little stars brought down from heaven. Rainbow bridge, original sin, the white blouses, knee-high bottle green woolen socks, tartan skirt, meekness, bony knees. I still find it hard to speak out publicly. Punishment, retribution, in-house exam. Don't tell Sister O'Looney, married name. The hand that rocks the cradle, Catholic education hypocrisy, wild boarding school girl's secret tryst. First, second, third base. Wounding, truth, healing. New paradigm. Like some wise thing replete with too much rage, some woman's yellow hair has maddened every mother's boy. Sheltered places, finishing schools for the elite. Return to innocence. Petty tyrants, mass dysfunction, mensa, menstruation. The inevitability of death, Shakespeare and netball. Come away, O human child. The inner worlds are born. Transubstantiation. Letters home. Censored letters. French letters. Mother's dream. Finest education. Misplaced love. Male. Alien. Unknown. Distinctly mysterious. Erotic onomatopoeia. Tennis, tarmac and tanning. Leaving surf regurgitation of other people's ideas. Freedom, fucking and fallacy. Dublin, dark place, crushing. My soul taking flight. Incarnate demon. Sacrifice of the inner for the outer. Lovers breathing. Slow. Soft. Flight. Complete mystery. Closure.
Three short poems that were written in Irish by a poet friend of mine, Patrick McGay, from Galway, and they're kind of, I think they're three love poems. They're not for me, unfortunately, but maybe fortunately, for somebody else. So I'll read the Irish first, and then she asked me to translate these, so I did, for good or for ill. First one is called Truckle Hossenson. Yatsi Blaskan Happle, Te Huini Hala Undalta Thraw, Gumundi Makala Sala Brog, Gumachnafali Raur Lichol. O Hotrach and Rarti Machit, Quirin Ona and Hur Nine Guid, Ni Ligging and Nirhach Lemash, a Huin Gavantfa in Coed. Defensive Words. They did used to bury horse heads beneath the dancing boards, so that his shoes would better clatter and the music rock and soar. And that was truly scary love, the dregs of savagery. I cast their darkness to the leaves, but pray you stay with me. First one. Second one is called Shattuch in Irish. Ní mise tá uait a chrí, ach frangach maná ar rohar. Ienach glint is bob an dat, is ráhuil nár ar clochar. Ach cangal o fós alive, is pókut lár de violiv. Hár le shattuch eitig dílachta, in asnid dréad gan vomiv. Standing up. It ain't me, babe. It ain't me, but a woman and a bike you wish for, preferably French, with a ponytail, hair upflicked, and eyes you cannot search. But yet and yet, I will grab your hand and kiss you on the mouth. An orphan must make another stand amongst the wandering crowds without. And the last one, Fuckle Fresh. Chester Saliva Hossig, Nemesis Nemesis of a Hog, the Rehishach is a Mach, the Mach Roily and Yeran Roid, Acher Solidictor Ian Ed, Ireater Ian Gona, Tabach and Freyan Sedere, Ach Rivishin, Ach Lahiru. Words of Relief. The first image burns the longest, those rats and swarms and packs, scurrying back and forth along the railway tracks. Before the whistle blows, it is heard in the marrow bone. The train may do its worst, but before it comes, they are gone.
Thank you, Alan. Next up we have Mr. Seamus Harrison.
The old head of Tente was a great favourite place for walkers, but now it's out of bounds. So this is about the old days. 4. That night on the head of Tente, he teed up his shot in a gale. VIP chopper, RIP stopper, his driver was bang on the nail. And this could be anywhere, elections or held or engineered. Hanging from lampposts, lost election candidates outlasting the storm. Random quartet cheers, away goal in perfect pitch at the barber shop. The Strand. Again, I walk alone along the viscous sand and pause to cast a stone beyond the spit of land. A stretch of evening beach that curlews lonesome call, the lack of empty speech as scented shadows fall. And at low tide the feel of sponge between my toes and green crabs gently steal beneath their seaweed clothes. A splash, you spin, too late you spot concentric rings, perhaps a buoyant skate below low water springs. Vacated moorings mark sea's unpredictive move and seasonal slipway stark where dinghy folk had queued. Steep ledge of rocky dome where free-range mussels grab in freehold shelly home the furtive hermit crab. Shy bait compressed in dread, a cul-de-sac dismay, 180 turn instead, leave room to get away. A dainty wader bird, his rapier stabs so quick, the gull he looks absurd, she's yet to learn his tricks. Mature, your heads conceal, reversed, inside his cave, the razor to the deal. I did have one close shave. Small fjord of magic spells, the final waves refrain. Assorted layers of shells, loose wells beyond the stain. A sconce of seascape sun, shards squinting to and fro. His opaque prisms run, their pyrotechnic show. Inside the harbour's mouth, a brace of rocks portray the danger all about, unlit till break of day. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. Next up we got, thank you, Bruce.
Partially, I wanted to see if I can recite myself like a folk singer with soft eyes and steady mouth. Instead, my own gaze pierces my own soul, disallowing it to billow, the sieve, the piano, and bellow. Will the needle keep me mellow enough to forget it, me? No, so I sing. There, but by the grace of God, go I, created weak and honest, so I wouldn't die. Wild fancy terror out on tape, I went there early, left way before too late. I envy nothing in your ravens with your black heart shuddered. The ghost in my soul and my mental palace cluttered. The bearing of the butterfly, I've always been the coming. The you I used to be was going nowhere running. Shit.
Thank you very much. Next up we have Eugene Crowley. On Chalk Moor, Dina Legia, Cashlon the Mutt, Quinuna Corda, Theatre, Casula Arson, The Great House, Castle of the Poor, Garden of Friends, Sold Like an Apartment, Shinne.
Thank you, Eugene. Next up we've got Mr. Aaron Lewis.
Hello everybody, it's been a long time, I'd just like to say thank you for Paul. I saw Paul yesterday in the park, and it was a feast day, and Paul was doing an open mic session. Really welcome back, and it's wonderful to have that. Thank you, Paul. I've been everywhere. I've been in Spain, in home, in Newcastle, for family reasons. I'm back in Cork now, so here we go. I wrote a poem recently when I was in Dunleary. I'm trying to find it at the moment. And I'd like to dedicate it to a friend of mine called Alan, who I wrote with when I was there. Allowing the words to flow from our fountain of creativity, as observers in this place of shattered light, we become expressed by life's journey. As our feet gently tap the beat of vibration, inhale, exhale. In each moment we have the unlimited possibility of love and creative grace. As a frog glistens in the morning sun, I observe the minute changes around me. As writer share a bench, and people express their poetic liberty, we are rectified by our own chosen level of awareness. A world of possible answers and deep, unique settings, where the shining moon twinkles in the blackness of night, an owl flies by and has the silhouette of a bat. People have an external answer to their internal problems. Allowing ourselves to dance free, we are the danced and the dancer, the eater and the eaten, the lover and the beloved. We are one in our journey of freedom. This is probably the first folk poem that I ever learned, and it was the first time I met a poet as well, and I think it was about 18, and for me, poetry was something that you learned in school, and it was boring. This guy showed me something that was different, and it was fun, and it was exciting, and he's actually now he lives in London, and I dedicated this poem to Rossi, and it's not by him, but it's called Desert Errata. Go placidly amid the noise and hate, and remember what peace in me may be in silence. As far as possible without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even to the dull and ignorant, they too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons, they are vexatious of spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain or bitter. For always in this world will there be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself. Especially do not fear in affection, neither be cynical about love, for in the face of all aridity and disenchantment is perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of your years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune, but do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond the wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You're a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. Whether or not it's clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be, and whatever your labours and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful, strive to be happy. That's it, Arada. Thank you.